Well, there's already been a show before the show.
There were no drugs involved, so that's a good thing.
You all, you're here listening in your ear holes, but our live chat, we've been doing this since about noon. It's about 6:30 p.m. Here we are. Welcome to the Rundown. Hello, my love. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I have been better. Welcome to True Crime Rundown. I am Ellen Marsh, and across from me is Joey Taranto, the most patient man on the planet. We've had a slew of technical difficulties, all on my end, all my responsibility, but we're here. We have not been in your ear holes for a minute. We've missed you. Life has been lifing pretty hard for me and Joey. Personal stuff. For those of you who know, I briefly talked about it on social media. My mom had a big old health scare. I had to run out to California. I started saying to the chat before I was cut off that I learned a big old lesson, and that is to advocate for yourself. My mom is the type of person where if she says she's sick or in pain, she's already at a 9. There's no drama in my mama. Long story short, my mom had bacterial meningitis, which is very, very fatal. Her best friend, I kept calling her best friend JP a DB, and I was calling her JP the DB, found my mom. It was not a great scene, you all, but she is okay. She is on the mend. It's hard. I was caring for my mom. I was giving my mom baths and taking care of her. She's walking better. She's walking and she's going to be okay. For those of you who might be newer, my mom is a sensei belt in karate and a third degree black belt in taekwondo. She walks about 4 miles every single day. She's not your average senior citizen. So it was really hard to see her. And Joey was doing some stuff. All to say, we're here now, right, Joseph?
We are here. And it's Pride Month, which means that if none of you are doing butt stuff, you're a homophobe.
It is still Pride Month? How do you guys get so much time? I feel homophobic.
I'm advocating for your own month as well. I'm looking to make October cunt month.
Yeah.
You know, cunts need to be represented as well. Right, Mary
Thank
Lehman?
You.
Okay,
Thank
so.
Thank you so much. You all, since we last were in your ear holes, a lot has happened in both the Karen Reed and the Diddy trial. We have opinions, we have thoughts, we have interviews, we have stuff to say. Shall we jump in? Where do you want to start, my love? Are you well?
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say? I am in my nervous era, my anxious era, and I'm flapping my dick suckers.
I think you should just take a deep breath and know that this is God's will. You're okay. You're all right. No, let's just dive right on in because I have some updates. So let's dive in with Diddy. First off, 3 charges falling under the RICO charge against Diddy were dropped 2 days ago. Most likely, this is to streamline the prosecution's case. They're going after what they believe to be is sort of irrefutable. One charge being attempted kidnapping, which involved both Capricorn Clark and Cassie Ventura. Another charge being dropped is attempted arson. That's the accusation that Diddy tried to set Kid Cudi's car on fire. And they're also dropping the aiding and abetting of trafficking. And I think that this is probably a win for both the prosecution and the defense, because the prosecution, again, is trying to strengthen their chances of getting Diddy. It's a win for Diddy, because if those charges had been kept in and he was found guilty, it would mean that he would receive more time. So this does benefit him. Thoughts?
So to be clear, it's the attempted charges that have been dropped. The kidnapping, the sex trafficking, that all stands. I think that was really confusing a lot of people online.
Okay.
I think it was a little superfluous to have attempted kidnapping.
Yeah.
The reason I thought that it was stronger for the prosecution, because in my mind, of course, you know, I am a practicing lawyer, but just not prosecutorial work. I feel like maybe they thought that they showed that the acts had been completed.
Mm.
If the jury said, oh, we don't think that it's kidnapping, but it could be attempted kidnapping. Also, this is totally in my mind. The jury did sort of softly request to the prosecution to make it very clear to the jury what the charges were. And in my mind, I can't make that make sense without them thinking about what happened in Karen Reed trial 1.
Got you.
Because a lot of that was due to jury confusion. People were saying, charges drop, charges drop. It was the attempted charges, not the actual charge, because under the RICO charge, only two predicate acts have to be proven in order to have the RICO charge. And I feel like the prosecution's like, we got it.
Yeah.
I remember the morning that it was announced, people were going crazy, going in their little offshoots in the internet saying that the charges were dropped. They streamlined the charges, I feel like would be a better way to put it, don't you think?
Yeah, no, thanks for that clarification. That makes perfect sense. And this all happened yesterday, right?
I don't know what day it is.
Right.
Maybe it was yesterday. No, I think it was the day before.
Okay, got it.
Who knows? Merry Christmas, everybody.
So now going back a little bit, on day 28 of the trial, the prosecution was wrapping up with their final witness, which was a Homeland Security agent. And the defense let the judge know that they would not be calling any witnesses. So this meant the agent was the final witness of the trial. Now, there had been rumors that Diddy might take the stand, which how dumb would that be? But turns out he's not doing it. This last witness was Special Agent Joseph Cercilio. Did I say his name right? I think so. And he was a summary witness who basically organized and presented evidence collected during Diddy's investigation. We're talking phone records, texts, financial documents, flight itineraries, hotel invoices, as well as videos. Agent Cercilio mentioned that he had collected something like 50 videos of the freak-offs. Not all of them had Diddy in them. So about 15 to 20 minutes of this footage was shown to the jury privately. They all had headphones on because it couldn't be displayed in court. It showed Diddy, a Jane Doe, and several male paid third parties. Some of the texts they were shown were Diddy dealing with supplies for the freak-offs, but more importantly, there were text exchanges between Diddy and sex workers discussing rates, cash payments, essentially logistics for meeting up, flights and hotels, things like that. This evidence was shown to the jury to support charges of facilitating the transportation of sex workers, or essentially trafficking, right, Ellen?
Yes, the crossing of state lines, even if that means I'm flying someone from Vegas to LA.
Right. The jury was also shown text messages from Jane Doe saying, "I don't want to participate in these hotel nights. You're only using me to fulfill your fantasies." But then the defense presented video excerpts and messages which showed some participants, and that includes the Jane Doe that said, "You're only using me to fulfill your fantasies," willingly participating and in some cases initiating these encounters as a means of challenging the prosecution's assertion of coercion. Previously, Special Agent Penland, who presented detailed forensic timelines, also including texts and hotel records that supported, you know, Diddy's sex trafficking charges and witness intimidation. She said Diddy used his personal credit card to hire and transport several sex workers from out of state to New York. He also used his personal credit card to provide airfare and hotel accommodations. There were also text exchanges between Diddy and Cassie Ventura discussing hiring a male escort named Skylar. They also presented a couple photos that Cassie texted Diddy, showing him her black eye and busted lip, saying, "You're sick for thinking that this is okay. Please stay away from me." There are also texts showing Christina Quorum and Diddy's bodyguard D-Rock fully cooperating with Diddy to help him manage and or hide the illegal things he was doing, including abusing Cassie.
I want to circle back to a couple things, and one of them is Christina Quorum.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Cassie, the defense showed video footage of Cassie participating in the freak-offs in a way that suggests she was an active and consentive participant. I will explain more, but this is supported by texts from Cassie saying, "I keep having sexy flashbacks of yesterday and I bought sexy outfits for later," referring to hotel nights and or freak-offs. Stockholm syndrome is a real thing. And when you are a survivor of domestic violence and you're trying to keep your abuser happy, of course you're going to send things like that. But again, the defense is going to spin it to be like, how bad could he be? She participated.
That's their only defense.
Yeah.
So you liked it. So you agreed to it.
Right.
So you liked it. I have seen them put up nothing other than "so you like it," which screams none of you all know or care how the cycles of abuse continue. And he has continued to do this for 30 years. It is pathetic to me, actually.
I agree. Like you said, it is their only defense because there were a lot more texts like this. Absolutely, the defense is running with this narrative that that, yes, Diddy made mistakes with Cassie, but he didn't force her to participate in the freak-offs, and how bad could he be? She kept coming back, or she kept trying to participate. I mean, we all heard about the things that Diddy said and did when he was unhappy, and it took very little to make him unhappy. Very little. He is a very scary man in a lot of ways, but when that switch flipped, nobody wanted to be in the line of fire. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Correct me if I'm wrong, but closing arguments are underway today, right?
Well, the prosecution's closing arguments was 5 hours long. That's two Titanics. So it's going. I have a lot to say. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from the chat. I really want to talk about two main things. Joey, right off the bat, what are your thoughts on the defense not having a case? I can see it one of two ways. I've actually come to the conclusion that my ability to see both sides is now very toxic because I could never make up my mind. I'm such a goldfish. But when you heard that, what were your initial thoughts as just like a lay person? They're not putting up any witnesses. What did you think?
Oh, wow. That's incredibly strategic.
You did. Your mind went straight to strategy.
Yeah.
I can see this one of two ways. Diddy's defense choosing to not call witnesses, I feel like could be a very calculated show of strength because the burden of proof lies squarely on the prosecution. This is something we've been talking about in the Karen Reed case and the Diddy case. So if the defense feels like the government hasn't proven their case beyond a reasonable doubt, maybe the defense was like, I mean, we're not going to put anybody up on the stand to cross to make this any worse than it already is, to provide any kind of alternative narratives. Or is it because they're thinking they have anything that they could put up would be worse? Does it make the defense appear to the public and the jury like they're passive? Because we as humans want the information. We want the other side. The jury is a group of human beings. They are not legal experts or legal analysts. I really wonder if this undermines their credibility or they're like, they just didn't have enough. Is it a power move or is it weakness? I don't know.
It's interesting because Elizabeth said sometimes no defense is the only defense.
I can see that. Ooh, Ashlyn, that's kind of what I was thinking, Ashlyn. She says, I think they want everyone to think it's a power move, but it's not.
Very viable option.
Jacqueline says, I think those two are kind of one and the same. The defense is saying that's all info there is to know, just that he was living a kinky lifestyle and it's not a crime. Yeah, that's what they keep coming back to is people are allowed to have sex, but the drugs, we're not talking weed here, people. We're not talking a casual mushroom journey. We're talking prescriptions. In fake names, we're talking coke, we're talking molly, we're talking heavy stuff. That is a crime. And the crossing of state lines to engage in prostitution, they only need two predicate acts for the RICO charge to go through. I am very confused. Diddy has a team of really powerful, really smart people. Or here's my last thought. Are they like, we don't got this? Let's start on the appeal. And they're going to get them on some kind of minutia, some kind of legal thing. Because remember, Brian Steele's been up there yelling mistrial this whole time.
Yeah.
So maybe they're like, this is a wash. Diddy, you got to stay in Brooklyn for another year or whatever, but we're going to get them on an appeal. What do you guys think about that? Kelly says they're pre-gaming for an appeal. The other thing I wanted to talk about, something that is very interesting to me is Christina Corum and D-Rock not being called to the stand. Now, when the case first started, I was screaming and hollering, take down all the co-conspirators. As I heard everyone's story and I read their testimony, I realized that there were dozens of co-conspirators, from assistants to makeup artists, everyone. They were people doing the wrong thing for a bad man. A lot of them were young, without knowledge, but two co-conspirators, Christina Corum and D-Rock. I personally believe they were not called to testify because they would have asked for immunity. The court is prepping them to be charged, or else why weren't they in court? Because they granted every witness who came forward to give viable information was granted immunity, and you can't do that with KK and D-Rock. You just can't.
Yeah.
I believe they're going to be charged as co-conspirators if it goes down.
I agree. Side note, the other day I was on TikTok and Aubrey O'Day popped up in an interview.
I saw that.
And I thought what she had to say was really interesting.
I fear for the messaging that we're going to be giving any newcomers in the industry. I'm really wanting to make sure that everybody is highly aware of how vast and wide the response of this jury is going to read for everyone. And if he were to walk free, he's coming after everybody.
I do believe that. Unless he was so, I don't know. It really depends on how unhinged he is. Unless there's a world where he's so exhausted by this trial that he's like, I'm just going to let it rest. But I don't think so. I think from what we know, that man is vengeful.
Absolutely. I saw that interview as well. And that was such a good point that she makes, because it sets a precedent that if you have enough money and power to hire these attorneys, they'll get you out on just a little technicality. Something else that I was thinking about yesterday, last night, when I was reading about the closing arguments, which took 5 hours. That's 1.5 Dances with Wolves. All of Diddy's kids attended the closing arguments. Now, the girls haven't been in the courtroom since Cassie Ventura. As a reminder, Diddy shares 7 kids with 4 different women. There's Quincy, Justin, I think his name is Chance, Christian, I'll be sure's son, and then the twins, Delilah and Jesse, and I can't remember the other one's name. All of them were there. I can't remember on one podcast I talked about it. Maybe it was this one. Maybe it was Moms and Mysteries. I remember being disgusted that the girls laughed during Cassie's testimony. And then I was thinking about these children, and they're all adults. I believe the twins are the youngest. I believe they're 17 or 18. But they were sitting in a courtroom while the world hears in undeniable and graphic detail what their father is accused of doing to women over and over again. Like I said, they've skipped most of the proceedings, but in that 5 hours, they pretty much summed everything up. It was reported that the girls cried. And my first reaction was kind of like, well, fuck you for crying. You laughed at Cassie when she was up there bearing her soul. That was my first thought. Oh, my heart's pounding. And then I thought about it, and I kind of wanted to back up the harsh comments that I said when I was talking about them laughing, which is horrible. But this is the man that raised them in whatever capacity, whatever happens behind closed doors, we don't know. But when you're young and you have a dad, and when I did have a dad, that's not a joke. When I was young, I believed my dad was my protector. And now these girls sit in a courtroom and they are shown overwhelming evidence that their dad isn't a protector, he's a predator. Knowing factually that their dad committed the most heinous, dehumanizing, revolting, almost unthinkable acts, crimes against women who are somebody else's daughters. The first man you're supposed to trust, and really letting it sink in what he is capable of, that he is capable of terrorizing women. I started to think, what does that teach them about men? What does that teach them about love and intimacy and partnerships and their life moving forward? It dawned on me that that was generational trauma.
Sure.
We're watching generational trauma unfold in real time. A man who used power and wealth and fear to exploit and brutalize women. And in a bigger scope, this really isn't just about Diddy, you know, because the brand deals kept coming, the awards kept coming, but it's that duality of powerful men. And I started to really feel bad for those girls. We don't know how hands-on he was, but how can you teach your daughters that they deserve respect when you're out here destroying women behind closed doors?
And men.
And men. Yes, that is a great point. And men. You're absolutely right. So then I kind of like rewired my brain to hold space for those girls' pain. Everything just seemed even more awful. Could you imagine? Everybody picture your dad and hearing what your dad did. It is such a betrayal. It's a betrayal of your heart. How do you even have a moral compass as to what is right and wrong? I don't know. It hit me a lot thinking of him being a dad. I don't see him as a dad. I don't look at Diddy and see him as a dad.
Yeah.
And being a girl dad is a fucking gift. If anything, you as a girl dad should be held to the highest fucking standard. I don't know. It really hit me hearing how long it was, hearing they sat through the whole thing and hearing they cried so much. I don't know how they move on, how they'll ever trust again, love again. Yet they're Nepo babies. Maybe they're awful, spoiled, rotten little girls. I have no idea. But I just don't think that's a kind of strength that any young girl should be forced to find in the face of seeing their dad, who's an absolute animal. I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on a diatribe.
You're fine. This is a podcast. That's what it's for. Interesting. Someone asked, do you think, and we've been asked this question before, do you think Trump will pardon Diddy? I have two thoughts on that, which is one, Diddy operates in blackmail. He has a lot of blackmail on a lot of powerful people. I think that his reach is vast. Sorry, I had to use that word. Also, with everything going on with Iran and how much scrutiny that he is under, I mean, his approval rating is, I'm pretty sure, the lowest it has ever been. And I think the lowest any president has ever, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I heard that his approval rate is the lowest that any president has ever had. I think that if he pardoned Diddy, it would be waves, massive waves. But then again, who knows? I can't put my mind in the brain, if that's what you want to call his brain, of an insane person, you know?
I can't imagine that being high on his priority list, but there are a lot of things that have happened that I haven't imagined before. So that's really interesting. I want to ask a question before we move on to Karen Reader, or unless you have other Diddy updates.
I don't.
Something that our generation has really been forced to deal with is separating the art from the artist.
Yeah.
I remember the biggest thing was Michael Jackson.
Oh, okay.
J.K. Rowling. Yeah. Absolutely. It comes in all forms. What are your thoughts on that philosophy?
It's very dicey. This might be a controversial take. The allegations against Michael Jackson have always been alleged.
Mm-hmm.
He was never convicted of those charges.
And he was actually dead when the allegations, when the whole documentary came out. He'd already passed, yeah.
We live in a world now of cancel culture where someone says, this person did this thing to me, and everyone's like, kill him! Wow, that was loud.
You are loud. You're very loud.
It was really loud. I'm sorry. In the court of public opinion, it doesn't matter in a legal court. The court of public opinion can destroy people. You know, you have people who defend Michael Jackson who say, I don't believe he did those things for whatever reason, whether it's because they feel so sentimental with him, they feel like he's a family member or they love his music, or whether they're like, I mean, legally, he was never charged. All of this is alleged. And then you have people who believe that he 100% did it. If I'm going into the mind of a lawyer and I'm thinking I have to go by the law, and if this person was never charged, but then there are plenty of criminals who've never been charged for crimes that they actually committed. That's the thing. So I don't know what the answer is. Now, in the case of J.K. Rowling, J.K. Rowling has actively gone after the trans community. She has doubled down, tripled down, wrote a book on it. She's done all kinds of things. And I feel very conflicted because in my mind, Harry Potter is part of my zeitgeist in a way. Like, I own every Harry Potter movie. So if I want to watch Harry Potter, it's not like I'm renting it. Or if I want to read the book, which I never have, but Emily Padgett gifted them all to me many years ago, so I have them. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because I would be curious to talk to a trans person about that, someone who is directly affected by that. I mean, I am indirectly affected by it. So, sorry, this was a long roundabout.
No. We've never really talked about it, and I think it's something that comes up a lot, separating the artist from the art. Cancel culture wasn't a thing back when our parents had musicians that we idolized, and also just social media, getting all of this stuff out there. I really struggled with Michael Jackson, with separating the art from the artist. I think I told this story, but I was talking to Lola about it, sort of echoing your sentiments about how he was not tried. We don't actually know. He was a messed up kid. Then she looked right in my eyeballs, because she is my daughter, and she said, Mommy, what if the victims were girls? Yikes. Because I do have to acknowledge my own bias and the way that my heart is drawn to certain cases and stuff. But you're absolutely right. He was not convicted. If Diddy is not convicted, he still did these awful things.
Yeah.
And it's not that he didn't do it. He absolutely did do it. That much we know. But I was sort of battling with this because I really do think if you go on downloading Diddy's music or purchasing Sean John clothes or whatever, I believe you're complicit in letting that cycle continue by separating it and remaining silent. Silence doesn't protect women. The truth protects women. Talking about these things protect women. And I know a lot of what I say leans towards women. And you're right. He did also have male victims. Not as many and not as violent, but they were there. And you're right. And I should acknowledge that. It's just the way my mind works. And for that, I apologize. I just think we need to have bigger conversations about what that means to separate. Because you're right. Cancel culture, it's just too swift. It's just too fast, right? We see it on a very small scale. I didn't like this one thing you said, unsubscribe. I mean, okay, sorry to see you go, but one thing I said, okay, I'm a human.
In their defense, you did say Fags have their place in the lake of fire. So,
okay,
you know.
So yes.
Everybody just going, not during Pride Month, Joey. Not during Pride Month.
I do think Aubrey O'Day is right. Words I never thought I would say. It will set a precedent that men are able to use their power, their wealth. They're able to use fear tactics to exploit and brutalize women. And there will be no justice. I would love to hear in the chat, if we had to make a prediction, do you think the prosecution proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt? If you've been keeping up.
I want to say that I do think that in the case of Diddy and in general, the statistics surrounding women and domestic abuse and rape, they are staggering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always said this. I am a girl's gay. I am a girl's gay, always will be. I think that women are incredible and much better than men. But I do think it's important to talk about the abuse that men experience as well, because a lot of men don't talk about it. I feel like abusers are abusers and should be held accountable. And it's wild because there is a reluctance on, I would say specifically straight men's part, to discuss their abuse and not to victim blame, because this is not their fault. But sometimes those abusers they can get away with it for longer because men don't want to speak up about it. Now, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of women who don't want to speak up about it because it's re-traumatizing and all of mm-hmm. those things. I do think it's important to talk about both, and it's scary. And that's easier said than done.
All right. Karen Reed verdict and post-verdict interviews, statements. I have so much to say. I am so bummed that all of our life happened right after the verdict. I did watch the verdict live. I happened to be on a TikTok live. Some DBs were there. I posted it. I was shocked. It all happened so fast. There's still story left to story. So I want to talk about some of the post-trial interviews, because you all, these people, the PR of it all. Karen Reed was acquitted of murder charges on June 18th, 2025. And Michael Proctor gave an interview, and the McAlberts gave interviews, and the jurors have all been speaking, which I find is fascinating. And cousins have come out of the woodwork. John O'Keefe's cousins and Karen Reed's brother. It's all there. I can't talk about it all, I mean. But there is a couple of things that I do want to talk about. Let's jump in with the Nightline interview of the McAlberts. It was some kind of innocence campaign. It was some kind of narrative campaign. Matt McCabe, Jen McCabe, Nicole Albert, Brian Albert, Chris Albert all sat down. They got the stories together. But the direct and blatant contradictions that we heard in that interview, I just want to go over a couple of them with you. One of the things that stood out for me was in the trial, they had asked Brian Albert his relation to John O'Keefe, or how he knows John O'Keefe. And this is what he said in trial one.
So I knew John O'Keefe, but not well. I had only met him two times prior to that night.
But on the Nightline special, he says this.
I would have taken a bullet for John O'Keefe.
But would you go to his funeral? Because you didn't.
Right.
You'd take a bullet for a guy you met two times, but not go to his funeral. Noted. And remember, none of these people who loved John O'Keefe, I was only worried about John, did not go pay their last respects to this man. Okay? You all, it was like they didn't have a meeting or they got nervous. The direct contradictions. In the Nightline interview, Brian Albert said this.
I was just woken up out of a cold sleep. By the time I came downstairs, The police were already in my house.
Anyone on this planet who watched any of the trial will know categorically the cops did not go into the house. This is what Officer Gallagher had to say.
I would have to twist circumstances to be have the right to search Brian Albert's house. We had no reason, and there's been no reason since.
It was stated over and over that they didn't go in the house. What the fuck are you guys doing perjuring yourself on syndicated television? And on that note, that was actually one of the things that stood out to the jury foreman the most. The jury foreman has come forward and he's done a lot of interviews. He came forward saying not only did he say that the prosecution did not prove his case, he also said Karen Reed is innocent. He wasn't throwing around reasonable doubt. He was on the Today Show. If you watch any of the jurors who have come forward, they have all been consistent talking about the deliberation, and I want to get into that. But the key thing that the jury foreman said was this.
First and foremost, the house. If I was in that house, I know that house would have been stormed. No one went into the house. Someone's laying on someone's lawn, but no one goes in the house. It just doesn't make sense.
I guess my question, Brian Albert, did they go in the house? Because they didn't go in the house. So why are you saying they went in the house? You all know this about me if you have been a listener.
She does anal. Was that wrong? Was that too much? Sorry. Go on with your story.
Once you prove yourself to be a liar, nothing else you say matters.
That's what I was going to say. Sorry.
How many lies? How can we take anything they say seriously? If you just take that one statement, the cops were in my house. No, they fucking weren't. But if it were any of us, especially a black man, and I actually want to call myself out for this one, because that was the juror that didn't write anything down. In my mind, because I admit that I can fall for stuff. In my mind, he was a plant. I was like, why isn't he writing anything down? Because I have to write everything down or I forget everything. That man knows his brain and he was sharp as a tack and he was paying attention. And some people can just catalog that information and fucking good on you. So I used, again, my own bias to be like, how come he's not writing anything down? You know what? The fact of the matter is the reasonable doubt was there over and over and over. Brian Albert owned the home and he didn't come out. Oh, that leads me to my next thing. I have been consulting with our bestie, Anthony Rakowski, this whole time. Asking him to give the cop perspective. About halfway through the trial, he was not that invested in the trial, and I begged him to get invested. He did. One thing that Brian Albert also said was this.
You're an officer. Why don't you just go outside and investigate or take a look?
I'm not a Canton police officer. I'm a Boston police officer.
And you know, when I heard that, I called Anthony and I was like, speak to me, tell me. And we're going to sit down and talk about his ideas of the case. And we'll have a whole separate chat giving a law enforcement's perspective. This is what he wrote to me. If you can see in big letters, read it what it says. That is such bullshit. You have a duty to act. It's why you swear an oath. And he said, I would never, ever do that. We hope to be in a position to help. And that was on Brian Albert saying, well, I'm not a Canton cop. I'm a Boston cop. And Anthony today, he was like, I'm a cop no matter where I go.
Wow.
If there is someone in distress, it is my duty. It is my sworn oath to help them. And I want you to hear it from his mouth, because I feel like some people who might not know that much about law enforcement might be like, well, he couldn't do anything. He was a Boston cop. Bullshit. So I need Anthony to come and clear the air. If you don't know, Anthony Rakowski is from a former episode, and he's kind of my go-to guy when I need a law enforcement's perspective, because he is very fair. He is very measured. He knows the law impeccably.
And he's hot.
That is really the main thing. No, the main thing is he loves his job.
He does. He cares deeply. That man is very empathetic and such a big heart, you know?
Yeah, be sure and look for that. We'll have a whole separate, just casual chat with him. So that's what really popped my corn during that interview. But then, Officer Proctor could not wait to get his swollen, puffy face on 2020.
Yikes.
The main takeaway from that interview was this, and I'm going to play the audio. And the audio, for those of you who don't know, is him saying he wouldn't change a thing about the investigation. He thought he did a bang-up job.
Because it's blowing up into this crazy, crazy so-called conspiracy, maybe I could have avoided it by, you know, looking at other people's cars just to say we did it. There's some witnesses maybe we could have interviewed a little sooner. But overall, myself and every detective in that office work this case like we always do. And so I wouldn't change anything.
He said those words and he could have taken them back and been like, can I actually do a redo? No, he said that he did a good job. If you're listening to this, no matter what side you stand on regarding Karen Reed's guilt or innocence, I think if you are a truth seeker, if you are a justice seeker, we all can find the common ground to say confidently that John's death could have been investigated better. Officer Proctor saying that he wouldn't change a thing is a slap in the face. It is a slap in the face to law enforcement. Anybody who carries a badge, it is a slap in the face to John O'Keefe's memory and his family. And with the family, I want to talk about his cousin's statement. This is Vanessa Rizzitano saying this.
Hearing those words come out of her mouth literally was sickening. No. The prosecution, his family, his loved ones, including myself, were the ones that fought the hardest for Johnny.
I do think it is disgusting if the O'Keefe family is getting any kind of harassment. And I feel for the O'Keefe family. But justice for them is not convicting an innocent person. And shutting out any other possibility of what could have happened is not justice for John. I feel that if they truly believe in their heart that justice was not served, science says otherwise. And medical examiners say otherwise. And anybody who is following this case, I can definitely speak for our community. I feel like our community of people is always seeking justice, whatever that looks like,
right?
Whether it is somebody who is blatantly guilty or a case like this. And we watched and I feel for them that their blinders are so tight. I feel for them. Nobody should be harassing them. That's disgusting. The fact that they don't want that result because they just kind of had their heart set on this guilty verdict, that doesn't serve his memory and that doesn't serve justice to me.
I personally think that because this investigation was fumbled so hard, and I've said this before, I don't think anyone will ever be charged. I don't think that this case will ever be solved, and I think John O'Keefe's murder will never be solved.
Yeah, that was just a very cringy interview. We've never heard from her. It's giving 5 minutes of fame. I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. And I'm not discrediting their grief and their trauma at all. I just am like, what are we all fighting for? The two other post-trial events that I wanted to talk about are the statements made by Attorney Brennan. I'm not calling him special prosecutor. Nobody know how. And the clapback by Alan Jackson. Did you see these, my love?
I did not.
So Brennan, unprovoked, and made it completely unnecessary. No one asked him to say anything. He made a statement, and I believe it was the day after, or maybe 2 days after, that it came out. I'll read some excerpts for you.
Go for it.
He wrote, do you want me to do the accent or no?
Do it.
I'm disappointed in the verdict. No, I can't. Okay. I'm disappointed in the verdict and the fact that we could not achieve justice for John O'Keefe and his family. After an independent and thorough review of all the evidence, I concluded that the evidence led to one person and only one person. Neither the closed federal investigation nor my independent review led me to identify any other possible suspect or person responsible for the death of John O'Keefe. That is a big statement. It is my hope that with the verdict, the witnesses and their families will be left alone. The harassment of these innocent victims and family members is deplorable. He basically came out and said that the jury got it wrong. In the middle, it says the campaign of intimidation and abuse that has been waged, funded, and promoted in public and on social media is the antithesis of justice. Strong disagree. If this type of conduct becomes commonplace, it will threaten the integrity of our judicial system, affecting both victims and criminally accused. I believe that a lot of things that you have done threatens the integrity of our judicial system. You all do not wake up, Alan Jackson. You are not gonna win. You have to acknowledge game. You gotta know when you are outmatched. Do you think in any world I would have a clap back off with Joey? No. That bitch will go so far deep into my trauma, he will excavate emotional skeletons I didn't even know was there. Do not play with Alan Jackson. If you fuck around with Alan Jackson, you will find out. He's so fucking good. I love him. These are excerpts of what he said. The jury has spoken. But Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan, in an egregious breach of prosecutorial ethics, has tried to publicly shame and discredit that very jury. For him to attempt to supplant his personal views for that of the jury is a desperate attempt to save face in the wake of a unanimous rejection of the prosecution's case.
Work.
It says, the rules of professional conduct are clear. The prosecutor should support the legitimacy of the justice system and promote public confidence in its operations. That's such an important sentence to me. Openly attacking a jury's verdict because he disagrees with it undermines that centuries-old edict. Mr. Brennan claims that his investigation was, quote, thorough. If that were true, the Commonwealth would have uncovered what we, the defense, uncovered. Hidden exculpatory evidence, lies, and perjury by the Commonwealth's own witnesses, cops covering up for the cops, a biased and corrupt lead investigator with personal ties to the witnesses, and inculpatory and suspicious conduct by a myriad of witnesses. The only job of an ethical prosecutor is to seek the truth in a just and fair manner. The Commonwealth felt wildly short in that responsibility. Theirs was not an effort to find justice for John O'Keefe, rather than a personal vendetta against Karen Reed by D.A. Michael Morrissey and his handpicked prosecutors, and it cost the people of Norfolk County millions. I'm going to keep reading. It's just too good. The fact is, Karen Reed is factually innocent, and this case never should have gone to trial in the first place. This case is a stark reminder that there has been a complete breakdown in what is supposed to be our justice system. Those in power are more interested in protecting themselves than the citizens that they are sworn to protect. The Commonwealth's defamatory public comments ring hollow in the very constituents they are supposed to serve. Fucking brilliant line. It is now crystal clear that disgraced DA Michael Morrissey has no interest in actually seeking justice for John O'Keefe by identifying and prosecuting the real killer or killers. Sing!
Wowza.
The Commonwealth would rather simply condemn the jury and its fair and lawful verdict. We are thankful for the jury's commitment to the truth, and they found their way to a just verdict. But make no mistake, if DA Michael Morrissey had his way, the truth would have never come out in this case. It would be lost somewhere in private and deleted conversations that would have never seen the light of day. Corruption like this doesn't happen in isolation. How many innocent people have been railroaded because of the failures of our judicial system? We as citizens must demand more for our institution. All the mics dropped. If you follow law, if you follow the judicial system, the rule of law in this country is if there is reasonable doubt, then the defendant must be found not guilty by a jury of peers, period. Factually, Karen Reed may or may not be innocent, okay? But the not guilty verdict doesn't say that. That's what a not guilty verdict says. It says, and correct me if I'm wrong, Elizabeth, or any other lawyers that are here in the chat, if the evidence presented by the prosecutor was not sufficient, then you have to reach a not guilty verdict. And a not guilty verdict comes by establishing responsibility for the crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, jurors have come out and said that they believe that Karen Reed is innocent, but that is actually not what a not guilty verdict says. It says you fucked up, you couldn't keep track of your lies, and the investigation was horrible. If any lawyers have anything else to add. Okay, thank you. Elizabeth, a lawyer, says not guilty does not mean innocent. So anybody who still thinks she is guilty, I mean, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Maybe she's not. They just didn't do a good job. What are your thoughts, my love?
Well, what I have to say is I can tell you what is for sure going to happen with the Canton Police Department, and that is they will be fisted by the FBI. And I cannot wait to see the outcome of that, because at this point, Karen is the least of their worries. The FBI is who they should really be afraid of.
I do kind of want to have another follow-up conversation of the ripple effects another day. You know, we had to get, you know, a bunch of this stuff out, and so much is coming out, and I really want to talk about the jurors. You all, if you have a moment, watch some of these interviews. They did a great job, to the point in which when they were handing down the DUI guilty charge, you know what they did, Joey? They went back to the waterfall video and they were watching how many drinks Karen consumed. They just didn't take the word for it. They went back and they watched her. Okay, there's one. She put that drink down and they followed her on the video surveillance. I gotta say, they took their job very seriously. They went through everything. When you hear their chain of events, because one of the jurors, she said, I walked into the trial thinking that this might be manslaughter. And she's like, and no, she is innocent. They really did their due diligence. So I'd really love to have another chat just about what the jury has then told us. What do you think about the jury coming forward in the age of social media and telling us their process and telling us their ideas? What are your thoughts on that?
I love it. I was actually curious about what they're legally allowed to say. I was unsure of that. But I think if anyone can really shed light on the experience of this trial, I think that their perspective is probably fascinating and interesting. But like, you know, even talking about the end with the ballots, I want to hear all of it. I just didn't know how much they were allowed to talk about.
It's all public record, if I'm not mistaken. I believe they can talk about anything. They've been telling us everything. And I got to say, everything I've listened to, they did a really good job down to handing down the OUI. She was drinking and driving. Don't fucking drink and drive. You can kill people. It's disgusting. You did deserve that charge, but you all deserve that charge. You were all hammered. You were all drinking and driving. No excuse. But they didn't just hand that down blindly. They went in and they investigated. They did a great job. So I want to do a whole follow-up on the jurors. We're going to have a conversation with Sergeant Detective Anthony Rakowski from the Hartford Police Department and get his views on really what it means to have corrupt police. What does that mean for the good guys that are out here trying to protect, trying to do their best, trying to be public servants? What does that mean for them seeing guys like that? You know, it's like when Ben Platt gets on stage, my love. You hurt on the inside.
I've never said a thing against Ben Splat.
Anyway, that does it for this episode of The Rundown. Sorry it was so long. We had a lot to cover, but there is a lot more conversation. I said this once. I do believe that the Karen Reed trial is very important. It opens up conversation of investigation, corruption, and what police, law enforcement, even medical examiners are able to do if put in the wrong hands. So let's keep that conversation going. Say something funny, my love.
This episode is brought to you by Liz Sager and her knitting, because watching you knit throughout this entire episode has literally been more relaxing than a full release massage. So thank you.
Please reach out to Liz for knitting lessons.
She's like, I'm knitting a cock ring for Pride. It better be a cock ring for me, Liz Sager.